Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Gotta tell you, I'm kind of digging the vibes surrounding this particular All-Star break. As the MLB draft has been shoehorned into the All-Star break, and you've got round one of the draft tonight, an attempted made-for-television event, but we will talk about that in an hour or so with Kevin Goldstein from Fangraphs. Also today, the Futures game starts at 2 p.m. Central Time this afternoon. You can see it on MLB Network if you're out and about driving, or if you just like the call of a good, crisp radio play-by-play man, check out Mike Ferrin on Sirius XM. You hear him on Diamondbacks broadcast, but today he gets the Futures game, and we get him this morning before his day begins. Good morning, Mike Ferrin. Welcome to Hit and Run. How you doing today, buddy?
Well, I'm good, but that's the first time I've ever had the words good or crisp involved with anything that I've done. So,
just take it. Just take it. Are you excited? Are you excited for this? Is this your first Futures game? Forgive me.
No. This is the first one I did was actually 2010.
Oh, boy.
So that was like Mike Trout, Eric Hosmer. Mike Trout didn't start the game and only came in because Dominic Brown hurt his hamstring in the first inning. Like, that's how long ago we've been doing Futures games. So this is, that makes the 11th since we didn't have one last year. It's a great event. I wish they hadn't shortened it to 7 innings the last 2 years, but it's great. And the American League squad in particular this year is just loaded with, like, premium prospects.
Yeah, 15 of the top 100 prospects in the game are on the American League side. 16 on the National League side, too. But the American League, you got the two Seattle guys, Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez. You've got Adley Rutschman, the catcher. You got Spencer Torkelson. You got Bobby Witt Jr., all those guys in the American League, right? Loaded.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. And you get Jason Dominguez, who is maybe the most hyped international free agent that's ever signed. And he's basically played a week's worth of games in the U.S. in his career, and those are all the complex league. Over the last week, he'll be making kind of his coming out party, I guess, in a lot of respects. So it's really kind of cool that we get to see Dominguez on the field with him too. And for Sox fans, Yoelki Cespedes is on the American League roster, and for Cub fans, Brennan Davis and Manuel Rodriguez are on it. And I think Brennan Davis is starting today too. So
loaded. So all these years of seeing those kids, that's exciting to get in this early, Mike. In your mind in the last decade, like, just tell me some times where you're like, oh my God, look at that guy, or that guy is going to be great, and then you just kind of knew it along the way.
Lindor hit a leadoff home run, I think it was in Phoenix at the Futures game. Was it Phoenix? I can't remember what year it was, but Lindor hit a leadoff home run on, like, the third pitch of the game. And that was one of those where you're like, oh, wow. Like, it was incredible. I'll tell you what, when we saw Eloy Jimenez in San Diego, he put on a good show. He actually made a great defensive play.
I remember.
Diving over the railing in foul territory. It was sick. But he and Moncada were both in that game, and Moncada hit a ball into, like, the third deck in left field in San Diego. So those are a couple of guys that stand out just right off the top of the head. I mean, obviously seeing Harper, seeing Trout, seeing so many of these guys. I think, you could put, like, the best individual performances have been guys like Yusniel Diaz hit a pair of homers, in 18. And I think there was Hosmer had a poor hit game. And you go back down the list of some of the MVPs of this, and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember them. They were a prospect for a hot minute. But it's really fun, and there's so much talent on the field. It's so worth listening to or watching.
So yeah, I remember that Eloy Jimenez catch. I think it was in right field. And at the time, we were like, oh, my God, Eloy, he can do everything. And then he comes up, and you're like, oh, my God, how did this guy end up being such a butcher in the outfield? We had absolutely no idea. The other job that that Mike Farron does with the Diamondbacks, let me ask you about, before we get back to the futures, let me ask you about a couple guys in the Diamondbacks who the White Sox may or may not trade for. Everybody happy for Eduardo Escobar with that franchise making his first All-Star game? Is that somebody who would help a team an awful lot defensively as well as offensively in the middle?
Yeah, I mean, I think his defensive versatility is really important. I mean, it's not going to be a high on base guy. It's going to be a pretty aggressive hitter, but it's one with power. And, you know, he's a pretty good candidate for 30 and 100 again this year, if we want to go old school on the RBI tank. But
yes.
I think it actually benefits him with men in scoring position because he is a little bit aggressive. And so, he can play. He plays a solid enough third. I think he's played a decent second base this year, too. But really, it's the bat, and then he's just one of the best clubhouse guys in baseball. And I think, you know, anybody who was with the Sox organization when Escobar first came to the big leagues knows that when they traded him to Minnesota, there were a lot of people who were really disappointed. They really didn't have much time in the big because he's such a quality person in the league.
And as Drubal Cabrera, what do we think about this Drubal Cabrera and his utility these days?
Well, he just went back on the injured list yesterday with a hamstring strain. It's the second time he's had an issue with his hamstring. He's played a pretty good third base. He got off to a great start this year. And then after he came back from the first injury, he really struggled for a time and was just starting to get back into a groove in the last week or so when he goes down again. So, you know, I don't know what that's going to look like. I mean, he's obviously the cost of acquisition is going to be out pretty low on Escobar.
Yes.
I would think that he's, you know, there are a lot of the qualities that he has. In terms of leadership, teammate, all the stuff that I just talked about with Escobar, but he's probably more of a reserve than whereas Escobar you can play every day.
And then Ketel Marte, would they really part with Ketel Marte, who is such a phenomenal player, multiple positions, flexible, and really just still growing and evolving into what he's going to be? Is he really on the block?
No, he's not.
Good.
I mean, my understanding is they've been telling people, they've been telling people, you know, like, not now. Like, we're not interested in doing anything. He's got a really team-friendly deal with one more year plus two club options, and the club options are a total of $18 million. And if you look at his value on the field and where he grades out and where the organization grades him out, one, there's only a handful of teams that could potentially make a deal for a player with that much control at that few dollars who's that good. And those teams would be talking about moving like a top five prospect in all of baseball in order to get him. So his value for 3.5 years is off the charts. But he needs to get back on the field, too. He's had two hamstring injuries this year as well, and it's been a really difficult year for him because when he's been on the field, he's been brilliant.
It's Mike Farron, who is the voice of the Arizona Fall League, the voice of MLB Futures game, and also a fine host on Sirius, as you hear throughout the week with Jim Duquette there in the middays. Garrett Cole with 129 pitches last night and finishes off the Astros. Lucas Giolito with his best game since sticky stuff enforcement yesterday, threw a ton of sliders to go along with changeups, and placement has been better. It's interesting. Some guys are adjusting and figuring it out post-sticky stuff, and it's kind of fun to watch. Guys are getting a little bit more artful by necessity. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. I mean, I think the good pitchers were still going to be good pitchers because everybody is coming back, right? So I think that makes sense that they would start to make adjustments. I think the one that I think is really fascinating, Jim McCaffrey wrote a great piece in The Athletic, I think it was last week, talking about Garrett Richards. Richards was pretty open about the fact that he'd always used sunscreen and rosin, and now that he couldn't anymore, he didn't feel like he could pitch at the level that he wanted to. And he was always hard running fastball and you know, kind of like a really nasty two-plane breaking ball. And he's made the adjustment to adding a changeup for really the first time in his career and being committed to throw it and a slower curveball. And so, like, seeing guys make the adjustment – I think it's really cool because the best players are going to find ways to adjust, and the best competitors are going to find ways to keep their teams in games while they're trying to learn a little bit more about what they do best. And so I think it's going to be fun. I agree with you. I think it's fun to see the adjustment that they're making and seeing how they can still, you know, go out and pitch like Cole did last night.
Mike, what's the national perspective on, I mean, and actually you're obviously a local guy with WGN ties, but why did the Cubs thing end the way it's about to end? What do people say from the national perspective when they talk about why the Cubs thing, a success, of course, but they don't get back to a World Series and it kind of falls apart and seemingly is about to fall off the table in full here in 2021.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, at this point, the national vultures are kind of circling, right? But I think if you're to take some perspective on it, you took one of the most moribund franchises, maybe this side of the Phillies, and you went to the postseason, what, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 20? Yep. Right? Five times in a six-year span? I mean, that's, if your definition of success is only going to be based on making it to the World Series, you're never going to feel very good about yourself. It was a really good run. They couldn't get over the hump to get back to another World Series, but they got a championship. You know, and they did it for a shorter run, I think. I think, to me, the thing that's interesting is that they've done it for a shorter run than I thought they were going to be able to, either by not extending players or, you know, really when Theo first recognized, like, 3 years ago that they probably needed to start changing over some of the core guys. The fact that they didn't do that, I think, is the thing that's a little bit, or would be a little bit disappointing in terms of them, you know, not keeping this window open longer than the 7 years that it has been. But I don't know that there's anything other than that to it. And, you know, their offense, you know, continued to strike out at a significant rate and higher than it did in the championship year. And again, like they went to the well with the same personnel, and maybe it's a lot of good players that you just needed somebody else different in the mix with, and that's why it didn't work.
Yeah, I think so. And we've watched it every year as they try to change that mix of who's there in the in the lineup and try to diversify it a little bit. Mike, do you get to call the celebrity softball game, or are you forced to call the celebrity softball game?
No, I'll be heading to the draft for that as soon as we're done here. So we have the four of us that are doing the game. It's me, Jim Duquette, who's my radio partner, and then Jim Bowden and Grant Paulson. The four of us will be doing the Futures game today, and then as soon as we're done, we're going over to the Belco Theater and we're anchoring our draft coverage tonight. So it's kind of the coolest, best day ever.
I love you saying that.
I'm not going to hide it, man. Like,
don't!
I love the prospect, and I love this draft. And I know you're going to talk to Kevin later. He and I were texting about it the other day. Like, this draft is weird, man, in like a lot of really good ways. Like, there's good players at the top, but nobody seems to like one over the other. And it's really deep because they only went five rounds last year. So there's a lot of these like veteran college performers that are going to be pretty decent pros all the way. You know, even if they don't make the big leagues, they'll be, you know, important to organizations. And you're going to have those guys like maybe all the way through the 15th round. It's a really interesting draft.
That's interesting. Yeah, so just five rounds last year, just 20 rounds this year. So it's the second fewest rounds ever. And all those holdovers that you mentioned that stayed in college. So you got that kind of double graduating class like some people are seeing here. And you're saying potential pretty quick pros from college ranks all the way through to the 15th round. It's fascinating. I wonder what the fear is these days, if there is any left for, you know, elevating college guys to your roster to help in a playoff run as quickly as some teams have been doing it in recent years. Maybe we're going to see even more of it based on this draft.
I mean, I think it's an interesting thought. I mean, I think if you can identify the right value in those, you know, those later rounds this year, you know, I think you can end up with players that far exceed your expectations. And I think a big reason for it is, like, listen, here's one of the things that scouts have really struggled with is they don't have the data on college players that they normally would because they didn't have a cape. They really didn't have a sophomore season. And then they just had this year, and guys hadn't played in a year. And so the first month or 6 weeks didn't look very good. So that's the other thing is you're going to, all of a sudden we're going to turn around and we're going to look at, you know, somebody coming out of the 12th round or 10th round or 8th round or something and moving quickly and being like, how did everybody miss this? And the whole reason is because the world shut down for a year.
Yeah. Do you have a preference on Leiter or Rocker, the two Vandy righties and former Vandy guys in the bigs? For those who don't know, Sonny Gray, Walker Buehler, David Price, Carson Fulmer, unfortunately White Sox fans. Are you a Leiter guy or a Rocker guy?
I'll take the bat.
Yeah.
I love, like, the first pitch I ever saw Kumar throw as a high schooler was 98 miles an hour. So I've been in Ed Kemar for a long time. I love him. Character, makeup, like everything off the charts. But his fastball gets hit. And Leiter really is a control over command pitcher who has a fastball that's really good, but his secondaries are kind of inconsistent, and it's a funky delivery. So they're both really good. I think the fact that Leiter can get so many swings and misses with his fastball puts him near the top of the draft, but kind of like the high school shortstops a little bit better. And if I'm standing there in a position where I had to pick between one of the three, like, I probably would take Jordan Lawler or Cole Watson or Marcelo Meyer. So
yeah,
I hate to be the party pooper on that.
I think that's what the
industry's trying to do.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. A lot of the high school shortstops with longer time horizons, but higher upside, it's completely understandable. All right, Farron, get going with your greatest day ever. Go enjoy yourself, and thanks for starting it with me, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, anytime. Good to talk to you.
All right, you too. That's Mike Farron, voice of the Diamondbacks, voice of the Arizona Fall Leagues, and voice of the Futures game. He is knee-deep in Colorado prospect heaven, is he right there. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. A little bit later this hour, we'll check in New York and see if they really are targeting Chris Bryant and see what they might have to offer in such cases. But now the phone lines are open, and I want to ask you, Cub fans, why we ended up here at 2021 with this roster perhaps about to be broken up in full, and if not in full, a lot of pieces, 12 free agents pending, possibly four more who have option years. How did we end up here, Cub fans? 312-644-6767 is the phone number. That's also how you can text, as the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Kevin Goldstein at the top of the hour. We'll check into New York towards the bottom of the hour, but lines open for you right now on the score.
Every situation is different, and I think that you know, we're in a different situation now than we were in 2012. And so the decisions we're making, the processes we're going through are completely different. So I think that label is certainly something to be avoided. I think that people talk about rebuilds when you're doing what we did in 2012. And like I said, we are going to have roster turnover. We need to do that. That, I think, like I said, that was inevitable. You control guys for 6 or 7 years, and you know that it doesn't last forever as far as that initial club control. So we'll have turnover, but yeah, I think this is certainly not a rebuild by any kind of definition that we'd be using from our past.
That's Jed Hoyer on Thursday, in the midst of a very transparent, very clear State of the Cubs address, telling you what it's going to be. And I know a ton of people have talked about it. It's not going to be a rebuild, so what do you call it? Is it a reload? All those sorts of things. The real question is, how long, if at all, are they going to not prioritize winning on the major league level? They had three seasons with which to have that freedom, beginning in 2012, and they utilized him, and then started going for it in 15, and they won, 97 games? Had an unbelievable year in the bonus year, win the wild card game, win a series against the Cardinals that I will never forget in 2015, then get swept by the Mets and lose 0% of the optimism and excitement going into the season. 0%. Then they achieve it in 2016, and since then it's been an awkward, at times, slog. But it also has been 5 playoff appearances in 6 years, as our previous guest mentioned. And yet here we are, preparing for the sell-off and wondering how you think we got here. I know how I think we got here, but wonder how you think we got here. And we'll also hear from Jed on with our Lawrence Holmes in a few minutes from on Friday, talking about the offense. But before we get to that, this is Jerry in Iowa on 670 The Score. Jerry, good morning. Welcome in on Hit and Run. How are you?
Hey, great, Matt. And great job on The Score. I've been listening to you from Iowa on The Score for many years, and you always do a great job. I think that, you know, there are many reasons why we are here, but by and large, I believe it has to do with the addiction to the launch angle. And I think that this is an organization that needs a philosophical change in offensive strategy. The Dodgers created the blueprint to attack the Cubs' core in the 2017 NLCS with high fastball after high fastball after high fastball with sliders away. And they would not allow themselves to pitch anything belt on down. And the rest of the league took notice of that and has copied it. And this team, with its core, has never adjusted to it. And it's been very frustrating to watch. And the two of the guys that this organization has never replaced in the lineup, Dexter Fowler and Ben Zobrist, who provided an incredible amount of balance to the rest of the group that really swings from the heels time and again, no matter the situation. And while it's great to have somebody like Javi Baez in the lineup, we need to have somebody like that. You don't need six of them. You need other guys that can do the little things, have the appropriate plate approach situationally when the game is on the line, or you know, even early in the game when you've got a runner at third base with less than two outs. You don't need Ian Happ swinging from his heels. Ian Happ is a perfect example of where this organization went sideways. This is a guy with a skill set who could have been Lenny Dykstra, and they wanted him to be Daryl Strawberry. And that
the
is
irony,
really...
The irony there, Jerry, is that Lenny Dykstra himself, halfway through his career, got tired of being Lenny Dykstra and took a whole bunch of PEDs and bulked up and became a completely different animal by the time he got to Philadelphia. But, you know, Jerry, I can't disagree with anything that you just said. Now, one thing. It wasn't even in the NLCS in 2017. It was in a regular season series in August of 2017. When, I think it was August, might have been July, out in L.A. when the Dodgers dominated the Cubs like that. And I remember the articles after the series, like, uh-oh, they found something. How will the Cubs adjust? They didn't. They ended up going out and getting different kinds of hitters to change that lineup, whether it would be Daniel Murphy or Nick Castellanos or, you know, they'd go and look for those kind of guys. This year it's Matt Duffy. They drafted one who's different, and Nico Hoerner. And you know, the one thing that I will disagree with you, is that the philosophy did change. It changed within the organization. New, developmental systems, new developmental bosses, a couple off seasons ago. Remember, they didn't change the big league roster too much, but they did change a lot down below. Jason McLeod moved sideways from scouting to, the big league club. And new director of hitting and Justin Stone, new director of pitching and Craig Breslow, different philosophies, updated tech. So the pitch lab and everything that has come with it, it did change. Just took too long to change, and they got kind of passed by. And in the meantime, those hitters in that lineup did not adjust in full. And we saw three different hitting coaches in three seasons as they tried to adjust. And we heard how the message needed to be nuanced and how you had to get it through. And some it didn't work. It's finally working for Kyle Schwarber in Washington with the help of that hitting coach, Kevin Long, who Kyle decided to trust and started to do some things differently. Hit the ball off a high tee in the cage. Let's put that tee higher, shall we? Oh, and that's just part of it. But you know, Chris Bryant worked with his dad, Mike Bryant, on some very specific changes this past offseason. Stand taller. Think swinging down. You're still swinging up because that's the natural body flow, but think swinging down. And that levels him off just a little bit. Figured it out. Took too long. Took too long, and some of the guys could not adjust, and they had a lineup full of too many of the same people. And in the meantime, they could not develop their own pitching. So they had to go out and buy pitching. Sometimes that did not work, whether it was for a season of Yu Darvish and he was broken, or whether it was Brandon Morrow and he was broken when he just got here, or whether it was Tyler Chatwood, all three of those, in that same fateful offseason. So sometimes it works and sometimes it does not work. I want to hear Jed Hoyer with our Lawrence Holmes from earlier in the week talking about what an offense needs to be these days and keys to the composition of a successful offense. See if he touches on some of the themes we're discussing right here.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, for me, you know, I never want to get too far away from the basics, right? I think that, you know, I still think, you know, getting on base is crucially important. But I do think that, you know, where the game has changed and that there's no point in denying it is, I think that, you know, that having the ball in play is really valuable. And, you know, there's so much velocity and stuff in the game now. And some of that stuff may tick down a hair with the substance ban or the rules being enforced. But I mean, nonetheless, I think that, you know, having a functional lineup does involve, you know, sort of a combination of guys that, you know, you can accept some strikeouts for guys that hit homers, but you need some guys in the lineup that can move the ball and keep the line moving, because there's, you know, it used to be that there wasn't that many pitchers in the game that could go out and, you know, it sort of, you know, strike out guys with one out and guys in second, third was going to get two strikeouts to get out of the inning. And now there's so many guys with stuff like that you need some guys in the lineup that can move the ball. And I do think the most functional, you know, lineup we had this year was certainly in May when Duffy was playing well and Nico was playing well. I feel like we were able to have some better rallies and score runs at a more efficient clip. And even when I look back on 2016, I feel like, you know, some of the guys in that lineup, like Zobrist or Montero or Dex, were pretty good in those spots and pretty good at making contact. And I think sometimes we probably got away from that a bit over the last few years, and I think that's something that's really important. So I don't want to lose sight of, you know, getting on base and, you know, to score runs, but I do think that contact is pretty critically important in the modern game.
Wow, there you go. There you go. That's a real good answer, real clear answer. And he references some of the names that we have all referenced. And I think we know now. I think we know you need that mix. You absolutely have always needed that mix.
You know what? The beauty of listening to the Cubs front office dating back to when Theo Epstein took over in 2011 into 2012 is the transparency. We talk about it all the time. They talk about it straight up how it is always, pretty much. And I think they respect the fans' intelligence in doing so, right? We know what's going on. They're trying to be as matter of fact as possibly can be without any wiggle room for questions. And they back it up with their decision making and their moves, at least so far. And I think Jed Hoyer has taken a lot of that from Theo.
Well, thank you. That's Mike Rankin producing the show. Sean Anderson with the week off. The one big variable to that, though, the one big problem with that, Mike, and I agree with you, is after the 2018 season when Theo said something broke in our offense and they didn't change anything with personnel. They changed things in the front office. They changed things in the development, but he said something is broken. And then they hoped to just coach it up. They hoped to teach that nuance, hope to get these guys to buy in more to contact, tried to coach them up and it didn't work. That's a big, big disconnect for a lot of people. Is it's the same issues and the same problems that have existed, and they just did not change it up enough.
You're right.
Since 2016, in the postseason, Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo, in the postseason since 2016, have gone 19 for 141. That's a 134 batting average, with 51 strikeouts and only 6 walks. Those three guys did not adjust, especially in the postseason against elite pitching, and it bit them in the butt year after year after year. So I don't know. And those are still the three guys we're sitting here talking about, who they want back, who they want to keep of those three guys. Knowing what Jed knows, watching what he has watched, and hearing what he just said, do you think he wants to keep any of all those in his heart of hearts as a offensive baseball schemer, as a strategist, as a team builder? Does he want to keep those?
I mean, that's the difficult question, right, Spies? Because you talked about 2018 being where it started to continuously go downhill. I think from then to now, they were committed to that core, one, because they won in 16. The career numbers suggested that, hey, maybe they could be more consistent, but it just hasn't happened. Over time now, things are becoming clear. There's no other choice but to move on.
I think, and how vast the move on is, how severe the clean sweep is, I guess what I'm saying is don't be surprised if it's a lot more clean, a lot more severe than you're even expecting. Because the pervasive reasons are obvious, and they know it, and Jed is saying it now, nice and out loud. Let's check in on a possible targeter of Cubs assets with a friend of the show, friend of the station, Wayne Randazzo, part of the Mets broadcast crew, will join us next. Are they really interested in Chris Bryant? How would that play? And what else might the Mets do? And just some good baseball conversation with Wayne. That's next on Hit and Run on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It is 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. It is All-Star Week, but it's really All-Star Sunday. As MLB has revamped things and coming off a pandemic where none of this existed, it all feels very foreign and kind of exciting to have the Futures game this afternoon, have the MLB draft tonight, and we steamroll directly into Home Run Derby, and then the All-Star game on Tuesday. And somewhere in there will be a break, theoretically, for one of the broadcast voices of the New York Mets, and that is Wayne Randazzo, who joins us right now on Hit and Run on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's up, Wayne? How are you, man?
What's up, Spiegs? How you doing?
I am very, very good. You and Howie Rose sound terrific together. Hope you are enjoying yourself. It is... It's the way baseball used to be with two play-by-play guys. Are you enjoying the mix, I'm sure?
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Yeah, it's been great. You know, the Mets are in first place, and working with Howie, who's really a New York broadcasting icon, is really a treat for me. And to be able to sit next to him, you know, a lot of people around here, you know, they always ask, you know, what's it like to sit next to Howie Rose and do the games with him? And I always say, you know, growing up in Chicago, that I don't really know who Howie was, so it's not so intimidating to me, because you know Howie is not this incredible icon to me as a kid, like Harry Carey, or like it would be a lot more intimidating to sit next to Pat Hughes and call a game than it would be to do it with Howie. But you know, Howie's incredible, and he's been a wonderful mentor to me, and he's one of the best play-by-play guys in the business. And you know, it's an honor for me to be able to do this with him. So. It's been really good, and you know, about half the teams probably do the two play-by-play guy thing, and I think it's one way to do it, and certainly there's a second way with a play-by-play guy and a color analyst on radio as well. So fortunate to be in this position.
I didn't realize that that it was as many as half the teams doing it that way. That's really interesting, because it, as I said, it's the way it used to be, and then he got locked into the former player and broadcaster thing. This way is an opportunity for conversation in a different way, perhaps, than the ball player and broadcaster combo.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, it's tough to do now. Pat does 8 innings of play-by-play, and for a long season like this, that's a lot. And these games are slower now. You know, it's not a 2.5-hour, 2-hour, 20-minute game where it's pretty snappy and you can just focus on the game itself. There is a lot of room for conversation, and there is a lot of room for storytelling and different things than how baseball broadcasts used to be a long time ago. So I think that it does help that conversation go, and it also gives the play-by-play guys a break just from not having to do 9 innings of play-by-play every night, which is a lot. Only a few guys really do it. I think John Sterling is one of them and a couple others. I'm not sure if Len's doing all 9 on the White Sox radio, but it's something that's not typically done anymore.
670 The Score is where you are. Look, that's on another station. I don't even comment on the White Sox broadcast, Wayne. Come on. It's Hit and Run, talking to Wayne Randazzo here. Okay, so I don't think you sent the text to Chris Bryant in the offseason that said, "Welcome to the New York Mets." We don't know who did. It was uncalled for, and Bryant had a moment where he thought he was going to be a Met. Is there a chance that he still will be? Tell me about the third base situation in New York and the perceived level of interest in KB.
There is certainly a hole at third base for the Mets. I think that's first and foremost. That's the one position on this team where you can look around and say, yes, they can improve here. You know, Jonathan Villar has done a really good job at third base for them. He's a dynamic bat for them from both sides of the plate and a creative base runner. You know, he's a guy who can get some things done. J.D. Davis is coming back soon from injury. They expect him back next weekend, and he's not going to be just handed the everyday third base job when he comes back. He's going to have to share it with VR. So that is a position where the Mets can improve. You know, I think the biggest thing for the Mets right now is that their farm system has five or six really good players, good prospects, and then when you get to number seven or eight on that list, it's a significant drop-off. It does not go A, B, C, D. It goes from A to D pretty quickly as far as the prospects go. So it's about what the Mets feel like they can afford to give away and still keep developing their farm system, which they're trying to do.
So obviously KB has played, I think, 47 games in the outfield for the Cubs this year. It's pretty remarkable how little third base he has played. Would that versatility be useful for the Mets or not so much? It's always been a crowded outfield there the past few years.
Yeah, it can be a crowded outfield, but you know, I think that any team, especially in the National League, really still values versatility because they can move pieces around. You know, just because if the Mets did get Chris Bryant, it wouldn't necessarily be the end of Jonathan Villar's playing time. They still would want to get him in there and get him some opportunities. And playing him at third base would be a natural thing for them to put Chris in the outfield. You know, right now the Mets have three left-handed hitting outfielders, basically. Conforto, Brandon Nimmo, and Dominic Smith all bat left-handed. You know, Kevin Pillar is a good role player as far as the outfield goes as a right-handed bat, but they don't really have a serious right-handed hitting outfielder. So Bryant not only could fill that hole at third base, but he could also give them a right-handed hitting option in the outfield, which they don't really have. So they certainly would take advantage of that.
All right. So if you're not going to part with some of those top five prospects for KB, who do we have to throw in? You want Andrew Chafin? You want a real good setup lefty to get to Edwin Diaz, who looks as nasty as he ever has looked?
You know, they could use another lefty. Aaron Loop's their lefty right now, and he's kind of a guy they don't really save him for the lefties in the division. When the Mets play the Braves, it's not like, oh, Loop can only face Freddie Freeman, and we have to make sure that happens. They don't really operate that way. You know, they feel like the right-handed relievers they have can get everybody out. Seth Lugo's been great for them. Trevor May's had a good year. Jerry Sfamilia looks like he's turned the clock back 5 years to when he was a dominant closer. So there is a lot on the way to Edwin Diaz already. So I don't know if the Mets are necessarily looking at a relief option. They need a starting pitcher really badly. They've got three right now, DeGrom, Stroman, and Taijuan Walker. They hope that Carlos Carrasco comes back soon. Noah Syndergaard is probably not coming back anytime soon. So I would think a starting pitcher would be really high on their list.
So it's interesting. Only one lefty in that pen. Are they going to be comfortable doing that way? Some of those righties you mentioned must have pretty good splits against the lefties, Lugo specifically.
Yeah, I mean, they really haven't been burned by it. There hasn't really been a moment this season yet where they faced Bryce Harper or Freeman or any of those guys, Soto or Schwarber, and said, oh, if they would have had a lefty here, things might have been different. You know, Loop has done a nice job against right-handers as he has against left-handers. They haven't really been hurt for it, and they feel very comfortable with how their bullpen has been, and they should because their bullpen has been pretty lights out for the most part this season. So I think that a lefty in the bullpen, sure, that might be nice, and beefing up the bullpen is always good when you're thinking about October, but I would think that they would need a bat and a starting pitcher before they thought about a bullpen arm.
Jacob DeGrom is human. Three straight starts with some earned runs given up. Anything different about him post-sticky enforcement? And I don't ask that in an accusatory way. I'm comfortable talking openly about it just because the whole league is adjusting.
Yeah, you know, I don't think so. I think what he was doing to begin the season, you know, there was some regression to the mean that you would think would happen a little bit with Jacob. He's still got an ERA right around, like he's around 110 right now.
108, so yeah.
He's still having a great, great season. And, you know, it's been a little bit different lately, but he gave up three runs in the first against Atlanta a couple starts ago. It was Austin Riley took a pitch out of the ballpark that was 100 on the outside corner and a pretty startling home run that he hit. And then after that home run, DeGrom struck out 14 guys. So You know, some of it is just because a run or two here or there is going to beef up that ERA because he's just not giving up any runs this year. You know, I don't think there's really anything too different about him. He's throwing his slider a little bit more than he was throwing the fastball early, but he was almost like a one-pitch pitcher the first time through the order. He was just pumping fastballs about 80% of the time. So I think he's trying to mix up his pitches a little bit more to not be as predictable. That's really the only thing that I think that's hampered him. His spin rates aren't really adjusting any differently. He's not really a guy who would rely on that anyway. And I think DeGrom is pretty much the same pitcher he was before June 3rd.
I'm trying to think back to, like, you know, 6 years ago when the Cubs and the Mets were you know, mirror images of each other, with the Cubs doing it, trying to do it with hitters, and Mets trying to do it with pitchers. And if we learned anything from those overall developmental trends, I remember there was a little while where we were saying, oh, Cubs were right to do it that way. Then here we are 6 years later. It's like there's only a few guys left. I mean, DeGrom is really all that stuff. Although Zach Wheeler is phenomenal right now in Philly. So and any lessons we pull from that 5 or 6 years later here? Wayne?
The lesson for both teams is to never stop developing players. I think that's really what both teams have learned. You know, you can't just rely on the few guys you develop and hope for the best. You got to keep that train rolling. And yes, the Cubs didn't, and the Mets really haven't either. And I think both teams are trying to fill in the blanks now from there. You know, what the Mets did after that is they did start to develop some hitters. A lot of guys in their lineup are homegrown. Brandon Nimmo, Pete Alonso, McNeil, Dominic Smith, you know, these guys are largely homegrown players. So they did do a good job of starting to develop some offense, which I think has helped this team out quite a bit. But, you know, just keep that farm system as developed as you can, which I think as we see the Dodgers every year churning out prospect after prospect, they're the one team I think that you can say has done it really right.
Yeah, I think that's true. They kept on developing, kept relentlessly applying the pressure there, and that's why they've got arm after arm after arm and pitch hitter after hitter to swap in. Wayne, thanks so much. Enjoy your All-Star break and continued success. We'll be listening.
All right, same to you, Speak. Thanks a lot.
You got it, man. That's Wayne Randazzo of the Mets broadcast crew. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Remember that? It's like, is it the right to do it the Mets way with all the arms, or right to do it the Cubs way with all the position players? Either way, you need reinforcements. I still think position players is sensible, but you know, it'd be nice to have the pitching infrastructure and developmental skills of the Cleveland Indians, and to also then draft position players. But boy, those Indians just keep churning out guys after guys after guys. All hitting the wall a little bit now as the injury bug has just been too much. Lots to come here before Hit and Run leaves you. An extended version today around 12:35. But before that, we will talk to Jessica Kleinschmidt of the Bay Area baseball coverage crew from NBC Sports. We will talk to her about the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants and what they might be targeting from the Cubs and or otherwise. But coming up next, let's talk draft with Kevin Goldstein of Fangraphs. We'll do that next right here on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.